Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Carol Hornett, and I am president of the Council for Disability Awareness, and I welcome you to our podcast, the Financial Health and Income Network. I am really excited today for the conversation we're about to have on the topic of long COVID, which I personally feel like we see everywhere in the lay media, in addition to research and at conferences. And the special angle for this particular conversation is going to be long COVID and the whole working person. And I am also, for the first time ever, going to turn over moderation, and it makes the most sense to my colleague, Fred Schott, who is our research consultant at the Council for Disability Awareness. And I'm going to let him introduce our guests. And right before I turn it over to you, Fred, I just want to remind the audience that we follow all of our podcasts with an annotated and abbreviated transcript, and you can find that at blog.disabilitycanhappen.org. Over to you, Fred.
Oh, great. Thanks, Carol. This is really exciting. First time in the moderator's chair. And I'm so glad on this podcast to have as my guests and colleagues Kerry Wisner, epidemiologist at MD Guidelines, and Dr. Jonathan Torres, medical director for United Healthcare Financial Protection Services. And Kerry and John are both members of the CDA's research committee, so I have the good fortune of interacting with them on a regular basis. And long COVID is a topic that is of primary importance to the research committee in the current year. We've done a fairly deep dive on a lot of aspects of the issue, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the learnings that we've had as a result. So kind of to set the stage, why don't we turn first to Kerry? You were the moderator last month of a very, very informative webinar run by the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine that addressed the issue of long COVID. Can you set the stage for us, give our audience a little bit of a perspective on long COVID symptoms, extent, impact, the consensus of the scientific knowledge, if you will?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Carol and Fred, for having us on. This is a topic near and dear to my heart. So some of the naming around COVID, long COVID, has been interesting. So I'm sure you've heard like long haulers, long COVID. The official name is post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2, so PAX. And interestingly, the definition is a little bit different for the World Health Organization versus the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. But mostly it's a variety of symptoms. You've heard like shortness of breath, fatigue, brain fog, chest pain, headache, sleep issues. There's a ton of different symptoms that people are experiencing and reporting up. So we're still learning about a lot of those. But it's people that have these symptoms 2 or more months after a COVID infection when there's no alternative diagnosis available. So there's when clinicians are treating this, it's a lot of ruling out other things, and kind of if there's no other explanation, we're kind of putting it into this category of long COVID. And this condition, post-COVID, actually has an ICD as of July 2021. So people are tracking this.
ICD, yeah, diagnostic code, right? Yeah, International Classification of Disease, right? Okay. Very important in disability world.
Yes. So we are, tracking this, and hopefully, we'll get to see more data coming out of this. And the recommendation is that people record the long COVID ICD code, but also the other things that they're getting, like, chronic respiratory failure, loss of smell, taste. So really we're in that kind of data collection period where we're trying to get as much information from a variety of people so that we can learn more about this and get more studies. But as of right now, some of the studies have found that 30 to 50% of COVID survivors have at least one symptom 3 to 6 months later. So that's a pretty high percentage, 30 to 50%. And interestingly, a report from the Brookings Institute kind of pulled together some numbers from publicly available data and estimated that long COVID could account for 1.1 million unfilled jobs and 2.1 million reduced hour workers. And that's like 15% of the great resignation that we've been talking about. So it's having like a, you know, pretty big impact on the U.S., you know, even with this early data coming in.
Yeah, good point, Terry. By the way, sidebar on that Brookings report, you know, we have reviewed and discussed that on the research committee, and that's a really interesting piece of work. But as we all know, the fact is the author of that said, well, you know, this is kind of based on a whole stacking of assumptions, reasonable ones, I think. But there's additional data that needs to be gathered, and she had laid out a kind of an agenda for that. And what we can do is in the transcript, we can put in a link to that. So that's cool. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's a great article, and yeah, a lot of assumptions, but like that's kind of what we're working with right now. Is, you know, the data's limited, it's new, we're all kind of learning in this together. So like you mentioned, we did a webinar last month with ACOM, and we had four OCMED specialists discuss their work on long COVID, and really it highlighted
occupational medicine, right?
Occupational medicine. Yep. Yeah.
Not my former colleague OCMED.
Yeah, different. So they talked about, you know, how we should be orchestrating care with specialists and then having a focus on return to work. They also talked about, like, evidence-based clinical treatments for long COVID patients, mental health care for long COVID patients, and the neurological symptoms that people are presenting with. So there's a lot of different angles to coming at long COVID, and as we're learning about this all together, I think a really interesting point has been that occupational medicine has kind of led the way with a lot of these things, with that focus on return to work, and that, you know, occupational health as a general profession has really been in the spotlight because we focus on function along with risk and ability, and focus on people returning to work and their normal activities, whether that's, you know, lifting your kids at home or lifting boxes at work. You're still doing that same motion, and how these symptoms interrupt that is important. And creating those baseline measurements and working with their recovery team and having supported tiered return to work plans, like that's the bread and butter of occupational health. And I think a lot of people are coming to realize, like, oh, like this is a really unique profession that's been doing this for a long time, but now everybody's really paying attention because I think they're seeing great results because of that skill set.
Very cool. Now, you know, speaking of occupational medicine, again, as we mentioned before, Dr. Torres John is occupational physician, occupational medicine specialist, board certified, and also he is a fellow of the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, which is, as I understand it, in your specialty world, for the various medical specialties, to be a fellow of your academy is the pinnacle of achievement. So, John, Dr. Torres, can you give us a little bit of some insight into the occupational medicine worldview and the occupational medicine model, how you go about doing things? And then we'll kind of take it to the COVID, long COVID level after that.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you very much, Carol, Fred, and Carrie, for inviting me to be part of this discussion. Very, very excited to be here and talk about this important topic. Yeah. So thank you. My background in terms of my clinical training and clinical practice has been in occupational medicine. And so it was interesting as I was preparing some thoughts for discussion. I came up with the three important principles of occupational medicine, and it turns out that all three of these are so important for long COVID that not intentionally, but this is how it evolved. So let me go through those. I think this would be really important for our discussion today. The first one is the occupational medicine specialist really understands the importance of work and how this impacts an individual's sense of connectedness, purpose, routine, and of course, employment is as important as well. And I'll get into some of that here today as well. And so that understanding and prioritization of work has a lot of ramifications for an individual who has a work injury or a work illness. And this allows for the occupational medicine specialist to focus on helping return that individual back to work and hopefully full functioning as soon as possible. And so that's number one. Number two, the functional piece. So for all different types of injuries and illnesses that a worker may have, the occupational medicine specialist focuses on function and, again, that return to work as soon as possible. And that's also part of a team. The occupational medicine specialist works within a team, and that could be different therapists, behavioral health professionals, working with the employer about modified duty, transition to work, and helping be part of that solution. So all of that, those two are very, very important to the occupational health specialist and for the patients the occupational health specialist is treating. And so the third piece is the whole person approach. And this is, I thought about this more. There's been an evolution, in recent years in terms of the occ health specialist. In the old days, the focus was on, the traditional sort of medical or physical model and staying within the constraints of that for work injuries. And then now there's really, really much needed evolution to looking at that whole person. So what factors might be slowing that patient's recovery? And is it, are there mental health factors? Are there psychosocial factors? Restorative sleep, we're starting to understand sleep is so important for recovery and level of symptoms. And as we get into long COVID, we're starting to understand that sleep has an important, restorative sleep has an important factor for that as well. So, addressing the whole person, treating the whole person, whether that's through the workers' comp work-related side or facilitating, coordinating, and helping that individual get the care that they need from a whole person perspective has been so important for the occupational health specialist and affecting the overall recovery and function of the patients that they treat. So interesting enough, all three of these are so important for long COVID, and I know we'll get into some of the specifics here. The other last piece I wanted to make about the occupational medicine approach with function and return to work is that in occupational medicine, it's rare that there's an all or nothing phenomenon. Like, for example, if someone can't do their whole job, then they don't return to work until they can. That's pretty rare these days. And there's a strong and effective movement towards helping that individual maintain their work, even if it's partial hours or transitional work or restrictions. And I would say that's now more commonplace and expected these days in the occupational health world. So I'll pause there because I think that this is a good place to transition now for further discussion.
Okay. And actually, it's interesting, the points that you're talking about there. I think back to the 1990s. I was in a corporate risk management unit, and we got very involved with the worker comp program and loss control issues. And it was really frustrating back in the day dealing with primary physicians, attending physicians, who just had obviously no clue as to the work environment that the person was working in, and so would kind of say, okay, the diagnosis is X, and so we put all these restrictions and limitations on there without having an understanding of like how did that actually factor into the person's job and how could you accommodate them and maybe keep them at work and so forth and so on. So the question I have for you is, and we've talked about this before, from a medical perspective, making a disability determination, we're not in the situation where like, hey, I've got a diagnosis and the diagnosis automatically means you're disabled. And, everything like, oh, can't work, have to go on, sick pay, disability pay or whatever, that there's a lot of gray areas in there that that need to be investigated and teased out further. So can you tell us a little bit about what goes into that from a medical perspective?
Absolutely, yeah. So I'll start right off with that. That's a good transition. But, yeah, that is absolutely true that, diagnosis doesn't equal disability. What really happens from a disability coverage perspective is that, and we'll just talk about, you know, I mentioned long COVID since we're on that topic, but it's really, you know, a claim related to long COVID is typically triggered when the condition meaningfully impacts an individual's ability to do their job. And so that's the premise. Now, how we get there, I'll just spend a little bit of time on that, but it's really coming down to the level of symptoms, severity of symptoms, the severity of their underlying condition, and also the treating care provider's opinion as well. And all of that goes into that determination if that condition impacts the individual's ability to do their job. And it's been interesting with long COVID that with the COVID-19 pandemic and the emergence of long COVID, this has prompted an increased focus among employers for disability coverage. For a person with a disability plan, important support may be available for long COVID with regards to income replacement, and that's based on a percentage of their salary. So there's that whole piece is obviously very important for this topic today. And again, it comes down to, is that underlying condition severe enough that it impacts their ability to do their job in a meaningful and substantial way?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Carol. I just want to do a quick check-in. You've got about a little less than 14 minutes left, so you got time.
Okay. Okay. Great. Okay. Thanks, Carol. Some very good points there. And again, you know, relating to the whole person support, and looking at that. You know, we're more and more looking at a situation now where, like, you've got somebody who's got a health condition that is interfering with their ability to work. And so there's almost like a continuum. What can be done to, you know, taking into account what's going on with the person to keep the person at work? If they can't work, then how do we make them whole or as close to whole as possible by providing some income replacement? But also, more importantly, how do we get them back to work so that they're, you know, back to earning, but also, more importantly, to having, you know, just having the meaning and purpose and structure of being in the work environment? You know, most people actually want to get back to work, right? Everything around to focus on that is really cool, I think.
Yeah,
and I think like there's so.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
There's just like there's also so many like different symptoms too that I think it's really important that people be flexible and like empathetic with what people are going through. Like I know some people have kind of described that they had symptoms for a little while and then they kind of went away and they got better. But like some people are having, you know, really severe symptoms. And, you know, just like you said, Fred, like they want to go back to work, but people have, you know, fatigue. Like an example, you know, some people have reported like, oh, I took out the trash and then I needed a 4-hour nap. So I think you know, that flexibility to be like, all right, let's get you back to work like a little bit. So you kind of get that structure, but also not pushing yourself so hard that, you know, you're sent back into these longer symptoms, and the flexibility to kind of be like, you know, we don't know how long this could last and we don't really have a lot of great treatments right now for stuff. So I think being really supportive, you know, from the OCBED side to, you know, having your physician be on your side and helping you navigate that process, but also the employers to be like, checking in and like, how do you feel this week? And, you know, let's see how you do in 2 weeks and have lots of like checkpoints instead of, you know, okay, you're not at 100%, you're out of work for, you know, 2 months, 4 months, you know, like that's not really, you know, working for people, but that kind of tiered return to work is a really good strategy.
And, you know, yeah, historically I know and I think back to, you know, employer days 30 years ago or so, but, you know, historically, and it's still, you know, the case now that there's this attitude of, you know, don't give me somebody who's not 100%, you know. I'd rather have them, you know, wait out there and recover. And especially, you know, nowadays with labor shortages and the like, employers, just they can't afford to take that perspective.
Yeah. And I was going to just jump in too, just to maybe one comment, follow on for Carrie and Carrie and Fred, your point. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, you know, we need to meet these individuals with long COVID where they are, and it's very different. And there's definitely some commonalities, but everyone is different in terms of what their symptoms are and severity and how it's impacting their function. So that's definitely important. The other piece that was interesting as I was looking through sort of the disability, approach with the disability claims is that there is some other overlap. And Fred, you brought up the looking at sort of the whole person and what can we do to help these individuals, get better. But we, for all of us that are involved with patients with long COVID, getting out of our sort of comfort zones or maybe being creative about our approaches. But we've developed some integrated strategies that really dovetails well with this condition and, assistance with modified work schedules and return to work process, clinical case management resources, where there's a referral looking at helping these individuals have like coordinated care appointments, expert consultation, and other resources, and hopefully working to close gaps in care. Looking at that whole person's approach to health. And then, so if we can help the individual get better, but also, like Carrie was mentioning, be patient. This it may take some time, and everyone is different, and being flexible. And that's, definitely some take-home points about on the employer side and looking at accommodating, being creative about bringing people back to work. And again, focusing on that importance of work and being creative about that, and maybe stepping out of our norms to make that happen.
Carol, I feel like big brother, just telling you that you've got about 8.5 minutes left.
8.5 minutes. So, okay. Thank you so much, Carol. When we get into the moment here, we can lose track of time. But thank you for doing that. We've talked about the multiplicity of symptoms, and it's kind of not 100% clear what kinds of treatments work, do not work, but the importance of being able to keep somebody at work, bring somebody back to work with appropriate accommodations. There's a set of guidelines that just came out, rather extensive document. I mean, we're talking over 100 pages. I remember when I looked at it. Carrie, you want to just give us a little bit of insight into the ACOM, which is American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, the ACOM guidelines. Tell us a little bit about about that and what's going on.
Speaking of resources, so ACOM, which is a Society of Occupational Specialists, predominantly physicians and clinicians, and they help write clinical guidelines based on what the latest evidence-based medicine is. So actually, it just was released April 29th is the latest one for COVID, and it's freely available to people. So if you go to mdguidelines.com, there's a little orange banner at the top, and you click on that, and it gives you the clinical guidelines. So that's going to give you which research studies have pointed towards quality care. So it's looking in different research arenas from across the world about what's going on, what's working, and what's not working. I think the document kind of describes that we're still learning about a lot of these things, but it has extensive information about actual clinical practices and how to rule out certain things and which treatments are looking promising. And so definitely go and check that out. Like Fred said, there's over 800 references in the document, so it's very thoroughly researched and then peer reviewed and analyzed, and super helpful. So I definitely recommend you guys go and check that out if you're either a clinician or you want to learn more. Again, it covers all of COVID, but there's also a section about long COVID specifically.
Okay. Just as we come to the end, there's one thing, and I know it's addressed in the guidelines, and we've talked about it before, and it's certainly an important part of the whole person approach. But that is the whole emotional, psychosocial, mental health, behavioral health dimension of this. For long COVID, it's a really big dimension. I think one of the things we agreed on, the three of us, when we talked about it, was that's something that warrants handling under its own separate arena. And so let's, you know, we've agreed we're going to do a follow-up to this where we'll just focus on that cluster of issues, and we'll see if we can get some, another interesting additional guest panelist to help us through that conversation. But I just wanted to make sure we didn't let that go. But in the meantime, you know, the point that I've heard from both of you is, you know, the need to just kind of, when dealing with this, to demonstrate, you know, patience and understanding for what people are dealing with and going through. That's, you know, above all, very important. And we can't, you know, shortchange that. So any final, you know, words, observations from our guests?
Carrie, if you want to go first, I'll go second, or vice versa, whatever you like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I just think, you know, if we're all, you know, we're all researching stuff, we're all following the news and what's going on, but I think really highlighting what occupational medicine specialists are doing, or even like public health specialists are doing, I think is really powerful. A lot of that, you know, kind of falls in the academic world, but I think there's so many good programs that are piloting right now, and that, you know, employers can pull in that information into their own process. I think a lot of people are looking for, you know, the right answer and the right policies right now. But I think having an understanding that we don't, you know exactly what's going on, but we're all going to figure out this together, and being really empathetic as we kind of all learn, is going to give the best outcomes for people.
Okay.
Great. Yep, totally
Dr.
agree.
John?
And and I was just going to just say that a couple things. One is, you know, long COVID is real. It's affecting many people. And I think that as we're talking about today, we're learning as we're going. And so I was going to mention, speaking of resources, the National Institute of Health, NIH, has a research program going, and they actually will publish some of the ongoing research. I believe the website is recovercovid.org, maybe, but it's definitely Recover COVID. And so if for anyone who wants to look at that, this will be ongoing, so we're going to learn as we go for sure. And then, I was just going to say that, you know, if we can move towards that occupational model, I think with the webinar that we're talking of referencing today, you know, there was one of the COVID, long COVID specialty clinics, the OCMED physician, was really focusing on that functional piece. And that's where it has to start sometimes, is the treating provider. If we can encourage that more, where there's a functional opinion so that, and return to work opinion, if the individual is well enough to return to work, we should all try to make that happen. And again, that's a team approach, and the OCMED piece is one part of it.
Oh, splendid. Wonderful. This has been really cool. Time has just flown by, and we actually kept within our bounds. So on this note, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Carrie, and John. Carol, you for arranging this. I want to thank our listening audience. And again, as Carol said at the outset, there will be an annotated, edited highlight transcript of this that will appear on the Council for Disability Awareness's blog, blog.disabilitycanhappen.org. Look for it coming up soon, you'll hear the highlights of our conversation, and you'll have links galore to all the various resources and materials that we've talked about this. So on that note, let me thank everybody and, wish you all good health. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thank you all. Bye.
Thanks. Thank you.